Mr. Tucker Stevens, Reel 4. So these dances with that you had, the ladies must have got worn out then, because there must have been more men wanting to dance with them than there were ladies to dance.
There was definitely more men than ladies, I agree, but there was quite a number who were already in the station. They were civilians on different jobs with railways and whatnot, and that was all outside military, civilian. You know, the people who completed their service and remained in India. I expect there are very, very many out there today.
Did any courtships develop between the soldiers and ladies as a result of these dances?
Some of them had families. And, oh yes, some of the courtships did occur with the... with the younger girls, you know, of colonels, one thing and the other, they used to meet, and they used to have their dancing partner. For instance, a young girl would come in there and to the dance, and probably a soldier would bring her to the dance. And then after the dance, he'd take her to her home and things like that. I don't remember any marriages or anything coming off it, but they used to, you know, they used to keep partners or one thing or another.
Was it just European ladies who attended the dances?
Not only European, no Indians of course, but half-castes used to come.
What did you call a half-caste?
An half-caste was some distant past a British soldier, an Indian woman or something like that. You see, they were half and half.
Yes. Did you have any special name for half-castes?
No.
Were they called Anglo-Indians?
Anglo-Indians, yeah. They were Anglo-Indians.
Did any courtships develop between British soldiers and Anglo-Indians?
In some cases, yes. And you'll find them in this country today, won't you? Where they married and brought them back.
Did any in your experience, any in your units?
Yes.
Anglo-Indian girls?
Yes, I have known, I can only remember one, as a matter of fact.
What other recreations did you have besides dances and sports and playing cards and so on?
We used to have parties for children and one thing and the other. In some bigger stations, they were all invited to it, and the colonel's wife and the officer's ladies, and they used to more or less get together and organise a party, particularly around Christmas time. And we used to have some wonderful times at these parties, and even my wife used to help make refreshments and one thing and the other for them. But outside that, in some stations, of course, there was a cinema where you could attend for an evening's entertainment, you see. But generally, the life, there was always something or the other happening, really, for pass your time away, which was never a monotonous kind of thing.
Were the stations that you were at, were they well provided with canteens?
Practically everyone was there was provided with a canteen by contractors. Contractors, and there was nappies and a contractor, nearly always a contractor, used to supply practically everything. We used to get our groceries and everything like that from a contractor. And, you know, you'd have a weekly bill kind of thing, and then you'd just go in and pay your bill at the end of the week. They'd supply everything for you.
What about soldiers' institutes?
There was a soldier's home in some, not in all stations, but there was a soldier's home in the bigger stations, you know, such as Raw Pindi, and down in Bombay, Karachi, and all those places, there was always a soldier's home. And they used to have, like, prayer meetings, and then you could have games and one thing and the other in there, and they used to have prayer meetings for the troops and reading material, and they used to provide writing materials and all things like that for the troops to write home.
Did they get much use?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, they got a lot of use.
What about garrison theatres and reading rooms?
There was you had your own. You had your own in the barracks itself. You had your own reading rooms and one thing and other. You had a reading room in your own barracks.
And garrison theatres?
A garrison theatre. There used to be a garrison theatre in bigger towns.
In what?
In the bigger towns and that, you know, such as Raw Pindi and those kind of places.
Were they popular?
Oh, very popular, yeah.
What type of things did they put on?
Oh, I used to get some later comedians who had just probably gone a bit beyond it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But they, for that kind of thing, I used to be good. And on top of that, they used to form their own dramatic societies, you know. The different regiments did. And, of course, when they... Families used to go up the hill. They used to be in large groups, the families, in those cases. And then they used to form their own dramatic society. And, of course, all the ladies and that used to attend to that, seeing their husbands and whatnot. It used to be exceptionally good.
Can you remember any productions?
No, I can tell you the name of one, and that is... They tried A Fever. That was one they tried. And that went off pretty well. That was one of Noah Coward's, I think. Noah Coward, wasn't it?
I don't know.
I believe so. Anyhow, that went off quite well. They had some of the families, you know, all mixed up in it. And they called themselves the Whatnots, I think.
Were any services provided by the Salvation Army?
Not only in the case of writing materials and those kind of things. The Salvation Army, I have a lot of time for them. I always did, because right from the First World War, as you know, where troops are concerned, they were always there. And they would supply something similar to the soldier's own. They would have their little services, you know, with the troops and that, and they would help them to get mail home to their people, one thing and the other. It was wonderful, really. I have a lot of time for the Salvation Army. I always have.
Was that the general feeling with the other
troops? Oh, yes, yes. Yeah. Most wonderful organization ever, I think, the Salvation Army. Because, of course, I expect other people have told you that about in France, they were even in France and Italy and everywhere during the war years. And a soldier, he used to get a card from them and just said they'd send it for you. There was nothing.
The Salvation Army in India, was it, were the Salvationists Europeans or
oh,
Indians?
Oh, yes, yes.
Or both?
Both. Both. There was Anglo-Indians amongst them, but as an organization, they were wonderful. They were Christian, of course, all these Anglo-Indians.
Were there any other non-army agencies like the Salvation Army who helped?
Can't think of any for the war. No, I don't think of any. I can't think of any.
Mm-hmm. What about sport? You've said a lot about playing sport in India. Was there more sport in the army in India than there was in Britain?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. There was always a tournament of some description going on. We used to have tennis tournaments. you'd call those tin and bottle tournaments, for instance. You see, you'd take even a tin of peaches, you see, and perhaps a bottle of beer, you see, and you'd take that, and that would be all put in bulk, and then you'd have a doubles tournament or a singles tournament, you see, and a mixed doubles tournament, you see, and then that'd be all sorted out in the end.
So what were these prizes then?
They were prizes and that. They were same, you know, we used to make our own prizes and make your own sport and that, in the case of tennis and that.
So they were called tin and bottle
tournaments
from the prizes that were on offer.
Yeah. See, they used to have tennis courts, even for the men used to have their own tennis courts. And then there was tennis courts, the sergeant's messes. And they'd be almost every evening, there'd be someone playing.
Where did you get all the equipment to play these sports?
Used to buy them.
So everybody used to buy their own equipment? It wasn't supplied by the army?
The army used to buy hockey sticks and the shirts, the shirts, different coloured shirts and all that for their team, and cricketing gear, footballs, and all sports gear. They had a sports store. And one particular fellow, say a corporal, he took charge of the sports gear, everything, and as soon as anything was worn out, he'd get some more from a sports fund, you see. The sports fund was a part of the army, you know.
So what type of things did you have to buy personally?
Personally, if you things like tennis rackets and things like that, they wouldn't be supplied, you see, for... Not for the men, generally.
The games that you played in India, were they different to the games which were played in the army in England?
No. Only with the exception that we played British and Indian tournaments, hockey, and that one in the Murray Hills was an annual event. That was all British teams and Indian teams. They were all combined. Yeah. And you played as a British team and they would be as an Indian team. And that was their national game, of course, and they used to be wonderful.
But some games, like polo, were played just in India, weren't they?
Polo?
Yeah.
That was
a game just played in India, not so much in England.
No, that was more or less officers, and they, you know, they had their own chargers and one thing and the other, and they used to play polo, and they have a couple of chuckers, you know, they call it.
Were there any other games like that, like polo, which were just Indian games?
No, I can't think of any other. No. No, the general sports games were generally football, hockey, and tennis. That was general.
And you usually, and the sport brought you into contact with the Indian Army.
Oh yeah.
Units.
Yeah.
Did it also bring you into contact with civil servants? Did you play against the civil service or?
Oh yes.
Or the railways or any other sections?
Yeah, they came, the railways and that had their own teams and that, and they used to enter these tournaments. Only they used to be more or less Northern Command, they called them, or Northern Indian teams, you see, and then you'd get the United Provinces, you'd get several teams and that. And then I remember the All India Hockey Team, I'm going back now, donkey's years, I think about 21, when there was an All Indian Hockey Team. And, were we 21? Probably a bit later. And they were going all over the world, this Indian Hockey Team, and they were they beat England here about 6-0. And we had a game with them. We were supposed to have had a very, very good team, and we asked them if they'd give us a try out in 20 minutes. They had six goals up in 20 minutes against us.
What was the name of your team?
That was with the I was with the Raw Signals then. And they didn't have... oh, it'd be later in 21, of course it would. But anyhow, they beat us 6-0 in 20 minutes.
After these games you had with the Indians, did you have a drink afterwards or something?
Not with the Indians myself. We used to always have something on the touchline, have some shandies or... and in the, we used to have a lime or something halfway through the game, you know, half time. Have a lime, just suck a lime, and then have a shandy afterwards. We had a table, always have a table with some lime, with some shandies and that on. Have a drink of shandy afterwards, and then, of course, you, after perspiring quite heavily, it wasn't long before you were away off and for a shower and that. And
what about relations between other ranks and officers in India? Was there good relations between them?
Always a good relations, of course. Discipline had to be, you know, you had to have you must have discipline in an army. But otherwise, relations was very, very good.
Was relations between other ranks and officers better in India than it was in Britain, or wasn't there any difference?
I shouldn't think there'd be much difference, but the relationship was exceptionally good. Of course, I can't say I had a great deal of experience in this country, and having had 18 years out there, and a couple of years in France and Italy, but the relationship was good. There was discipline, which you had to keep. You had to have discipline. You've got to have discipline. Otherwise, an army's no good. If you haven't got discipline, you've got no army.
What about the messes, the other ranks' messes and the NCOs' messes? How were they financed?
They had their own corporal's mess fund, a sergeant's mess fund, a corporal's mess fund, and other ranks fund. And their stoppages included so much. Not a great deal, but so much. And so there was an account kept of all the different messes.
About how much would be stopped for, say, the sergeant's mess that you were in?
The sergeant's mess, I should think, what would it be? Only about a couple of rupees a week. And then, you see, you have stock, your drinks and everything like that. You see, you take, if you're a caterer in a mess, you take on stock so much, don't you? And then the difference between cost price and selling price is profit to the mess, which all goes for, you see, and then you get, you have to pay so much mess and allowances. See, officers, I think they pay more because they get more, don't they?
When your 2 or 3 rupees a week were stopped for the sergeant's mess, that was 2 or 3 rupees out of how much per week were you getting at that time?
Let me see. 34 rupees a week.
As a sergeant?
As a sergeant, yeah.
How much would a private be getting?
It was a private soldier would be getting equivalent to 4 shillings, and I was getting 9. He'd be getting about 20.
20 rupees a week?
About 20 rupees a week, yeah.
Mm. Which year was that?
And that was 1925-26.
How were the messes run? How were they organised?
You had an RSM. He was the president. He was the president of the mess. And you had a caterer. And the caterer was responsible for your cooks and your messing and the bar. That was the caterer's job, the mess caterer. He was usually a month at a time. And, of course, you did some other duties as well as that, as well as being a mess caterer. And then periodically, or less than a month, you had a mess meeting. And you kept books of all the accounts and everything. And the president and the mess caterer was there, and the mess secretary was there. And all the accounts and everything would be read out, and propositions and that made. And that was done with corporal's messes as well. And I believe the senior sergeants that used to attend to the other ranks. Their mess and everything like that. All accounts now were kept that way.
How well provided for were your messes? Can you remember?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Of course, you had your silver and everything like that was brought down from years, wasn't it? Your silver, and that was always on show in your messes, you see. And then, you're well provided in everything. Everything. Your furniture and everything. Settees and whatnot could be all add-on hire, you see. Because if you move from one station to another, you used to just give up that furniture, and that'd be hired from local stores and that, you see. Settees and everything, they used to be very, very, the messes used to be very comfortable. The British ranks had reading rooms and whatnot, the same kind of thing, all on, mostly on hire.
What kind of social activities did they put on, can you remember?
Oh, whist drives. On dances, very often dances for the other ranks and all that. Very often had dances.
You mentioned that with your sergeant's mess, you had the silver. I suppose it was very old, was it?
Some of it, very old, yes, brought down from years. Some of it we had in ours was from the old RE signals before the Royal Corps signals were formed, because they weren't formed before about, I think they were formed in India about 1923.
What does RE mean?
Royal Engineers.
Royal Engineers, yeah.
RE signals, Royal Engineer signals. Is that on there?
With this type of silver, were there any other strong traditions which were observed in your messes, can you remember?
There was a picture generally around, which related to the First World War, with the signals, a signaller being killed, and he's still holding the handset of a D3 type telephone, and the caption to it is, you're through, sir. And that was a motto for some time with the old RE signals. But the motto after was Certa Saito, which is swift and sure. And, of course, Mercury, old Jimmy, the Mercury was the cap badge, you see.
So, did you have any ceremonies which were traditional?
We always held the birthday, King's Royal Birthday celebrations. We always had march past on the, usually in June, I think. It was, because I was out there, you see, when King George VI was. And, we always had prayed and that for King's birthday, and general salutes at different times we had. When the general visited a Northern Command, we had things like that. See, when the late Duke of Windsor, when he came out in 1921, I was in Rawalpindi then, and he presented a Victoria Cross to a sepoy, an Indian soldier. And there was a terrific march past there. And it's outstanding in your mind, a case like that, you know. Because I was a corporal at that time, and I was at the circuit house where he stayed, and I was the telephone operator there. But outstanding, I always remember that. And when he came on the parade, in the first place, he came on out on a charger, magnificent animal he was riding, and there were thousands and thousands of Indians, and they gave such a shout, you know, very enthusiastic they were when he arrived.
And you said that, was it the coronation of George VI that occurred whilst you were in India?
I came home for the 25th, didn't I? That would be 1937. That was the Silver Jubilee, wasn't it? King George...
Was it the coronation in 1937 or 1936?
Coronation 1937, wasn't it? Hmm. I was
old then. Oh, I see. You weren't in India then?
No, I was old then.
Just one more thing about the messes. Were the other ranks messes and NCOs messes, were they closer together in India than they were in England or not?
Oh, yeah, they were all around about in the barracks generally. Hmm.
But, I mean,